This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, concerns over public transit funding in the Lower Mainland spilled over into the streets this week and sparked protests among transit supporters. Danny Nesvarandi at CJSF in Burnaby has more. Since the College of New Caledonia announced the closure of their almost 50-year-old English language education programs, local displaced Ukrainians in Prince George have taken matters into their own hands and organized English sessions of their own. Ian Gregg at Super Radio dives in. The 18-year-old midfielder from Comox Valley, Liam McKenzie, fulfilled his lifelong dream the other day as he made his Major League Soccer debut with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Heather Watson at CHLY in Nanaimo tells us more. And silent disco is making a comeback as folks in Smithers turn it up to 11. Pam Hassan at CICK News has more. Stay tuned.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvarandi, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. On March 23rd, 2025, a local public transit advocacy group called Movement YVR mobilized public transit supporters from across the Lower Mainland to hold a rally at Metro Town Station in Burnaby, BC. The outdoor conditions were dreary, cold, with a level of rainfall that was hard to ignore. But that did not stop the crowd in attendance from expressing their concerns over the state of public transit in the Lower Mainland. Recently, it was announced that TransLink is facing a $600 million operations funding deficit. The goal of the rally was to show support for public transit while putting pressure on local governments to address these budget shortfalls. At the rally's end, CJSF was able to speak with its lead organizer, as well as the executive director of Movement YVR, Dennis Agar.
This rally showed me that our theory of change is correct. There are a million transit riders in this region, and when it comes down to it, they're willing to go to the line for defending their system. And they're willing to thank politicians that support transit, right? That's our message is to mayors and MLAs, is that we will give you big hugs if you support public transit, but you've got to do it, and there are a lot of us. And so seeing the size of the crowd today, there are a lot of us.
We also asked Agar for comment on an announcement made by the federal government 2 days before the rally, which promised $1.5 billion in funding towards capital projects for TransLink. With this funding on its way, what was the point of this rally? This is what Dennis Agar had to say.
It's pretty confusing. I get that it's confusing. And I wonder if it's intentionally confusing that the feds made that announcement in a time when we're so hyped up about transit funding shortage. That money is for capital. It's great. It's nice. We need to build capital. But that money isn't allowed to be used for an operating deficit, which is our serious problem right now. The feds have been very clear repeatedly that they will not fund operating budget for transit. We would like that to change, but for now, that funding isn't going to help us at all.
Once again, this statement comes from Dennis Agar, lead organizer for the rally, as well as the executive director of public transit advocacy group, Movement YVR. This has been Danny Nesvarandi, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca. Or CFUR.ca.
Is it okay? okay if I sit here?
In late 2024, the College of New Caledonia, a publicly funded post-secondary institution in Prince George Clairelytenay, was faced with reduced enrollment, particularly from international students. The dramatic reduction in numbers led to an announcement during the fall 2024-2025 semester that the institution would be making cuts. We are now seeing some of those cuts take place, and the ENLA, or ENLA, English language program at the college will be cut. What you hear in the background is a gathering of Ukrainian community members who have taken it upon themselves to establish a conversational English gathering in response to these changes. Before we take you there, joining us over the line today is President of the Faculty Association at the College of New Caledonia, Marta Tejero, describing for us what this program is and what its absence could mean for our community. The ENLA program is just about the most recent program being cut at the College of New Caledonia.
Mm-hmm.
We knew cuts were coming. The college has announced some cuts, but this whole program is going to be axed.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like right now for the students who are in the ENLA program?
Right now, my understanding is that the college has committed to teaching out the students in the program. There's 50 students right now, and they will be allowed to finish their credential. And so the thought is that they will then probably be completing in the next year, 2025-26 academic year, their programs. There's different levels, so it depends on which level they're currently in, that they'll be allowed to continue and finish out the program.
What role does this program fill within Prince George Clairelytenay? Who is typically dependent upon it?
The folks that are typically dependent on it, it's a combination of Canadian citizens, permanent residents, and refugees. Those are what we would call our domestic students. When the college was marketing to international students, which it's currently not doing, we also had international students who would take our program and then branch out into other academic pathways.
So new Canadians who are arriving into our community and who hope to get permanent residency and then eventually Canadian citizenship, would they typically be dependent on this type of program?
So it's folks that already have a Canadian citizenship or a permanent residency. For example, Prince George welcomed over 200 Ukrainian families to Prince George. Part of the attraction was that they could take our program after completing, say, initial conversation classes at the Immigrant and Multicultural Services Society. So they were able to get higher level kind of academic levels of English to go into the careers that they came with. So we have very skilled workers that just need that little bit of help with their English.
So people who enroll into the ENLA program would have to have a bit of familiarity with the English language before they're able to register for classes within ENLA, and then they can level up their skills.
Yeah, not necessarily. Like, we can take somebody with no English whatsoever. So that's the skills that we bring to the table, to be able to take someone who knows nothing and help them build that skill. So yeah, we didn't have any like prerequisites or anything like that. If you don't know English, we can place you into our program.
Do these cuts have implications that might disrupt the College of New Caledonians' ability to integrate international students into the various educational pathways it offers? Is this going to be a hindrance?
If the current international students who are accepted aren't able to continue, it would be. The college has committed to letting them finish their credential, so that I think will be what those impacts are if they're not allowed to finish. At this point, they are going to be, and that's really exciting news from our perspective. And in terms of in the community, if there is no program like this, then there's really nowhere for people who come needing to upgrade their English in a more academic sense. There's nothing in the community, because I believe that IMSS has just lost its funding, and it's going to be reduced to a single class starting in April. So it's going to be very difficult for anyone in Prince George who needs English language help to get any in the north, essentially.
Without services like this available in our community, do you think that will potentially then become a new barrier, certainly, but become a hindrance for people who intend to join the Prince George community and become a participating member of our community and economy?
I think it impacts families. So you might have a member of a family who's working in the health sector or in the mining sector. And before they come to the North, they go, okay, what are the opportunities for my, you know, my spouse? Can they fulfill their dream and what kind of services are available for them while I'm working? That's a lot of the people in our program. And if we lose this program, then it's one more reason for somebody not to take a job up in the North and come with their family. So it's not necessarily the person, the skilled worker who might be in the mine or in healthcare, but it's their family members who might need the support. That's what we've been seeing, that trend with our students.
You mentioned the IMSS, or Immigrant and Multicultural Services Society in Prince George, is restricted in their ability to provide this service. Are there any are there any other alternatives or solutions you can think of that might be able to fill this gap in our community until...
No, there are none. The university doesn't have anything available. And our program was a very long-standing program. And yeah, there is nothing outside of, a volunteer, you know, church-type conversation class. But a conversation class is not going to upgrade someone's English to get into, say, their pharmacy studies or to get into their trade.
Is there a level of credential or qualification that the ENLA program was able to provide students that, you know, maybe a conversational class, like you just described, is not able to provide? Is there like a certificate, a diploma, or a credential that people can get at the end of it?
Yeah, so we offered 4 associate certificates that are transferable. So say someone from our community was moving down to the Lower Mainland, they had finished one of our levels, they could transfer that and continue their studies at another public post-secondary institution.
At St. George's Ukrainian Catholic Church off of Massey Boulevard, every Thursday, volunteers from the community have been participating in a conversational English gathering, assisting those displaced by the war in Ukraine to improve upon their English language skills. Irina Chori has been organizing these events alongside a contingent of volunteers who, among other things, make sure there's a play area for kids, that hot tea is available, and that the venue can be cleaned up before everyone goes home. There, in the basement of St. George's, we caught up with Nelia Nyukova, who arrived to Prince George in 2022 with her daughter at the early onset of the Russo-Ukrainian War and enrolled into the College of New Caledonia's English Language, or ENLA, program in January of 2023, where she's been studying to improve her English language skills here in Prince George since that time.
Just recently, that program has been canceled, and the community has rallied and created this event to continue some conversational English courses.
We were just shocked from this information because it's very important for Ukrainian community. It's important for us because for getting PR in British Columbia, we should have 6 mark for IELTS exam, and we should have experience as a full-time work 1 year. But many of us cannot work as a specialist because many of us enough educated, but we don't speak English. So,
in order to get permanent residency status, that course being removed now presents a significant barrier in your journey to getting permanent residency status and perhaps even Canadian citizenship down the road.
Yes, and moreover, some from us came in Prince George because of this program. And learning English, it's a significant step for our future. Of course, you can see how many people today here. They have their families, they have work, and they are here because it's important for us, really important. This meeting, of course, it's a help for people who don't speak English and can express their needs, for example. But course in college, in college we have reading, speaking, listening, and writing. And when we will have IELTS, we need not only speak, we need do everything. We must pass IELTS exam and get mark 6. And course in college, it's of course important.
Perhaps you can speak to this, the significance of transitioning from courses at the College of New Caledonia to these conversational opportunities here.
As I know, this activity not because college organizes this meeting, yes, it's because ShareHope organizes. So I don't know what the college offered another students, because I will finish my course in April in this year. So I don't know what college offered another students. But if they offered online, or course in IMSS, or course like this, it's not same. It's not same, and it's not for help Ukrainian people pass IELTS exam. It's just for show that college do what they can do for us, but not for help Ukrainian people with their problem, with their future, with their IELTS exam.
Do you think you now have to consider moving to a different community somewhere else in British Columbia or even Canada that does offer that kind of course to be able to continue your journey uninterrupted to get permanent residency?
As for me, cancellation course in college does not impact for me, because I will finish this course in April. That's it for me, yes? But people who started and I don't know, if they will have not opportunity to finish course, I think they will move in Vancouver or in Victoria or in another place where they have choice, because here they have not choice. So it's only one choice for people who have really foundation skills.
That's Nelia Nyukova, current endless student at the College of New Caledonia and participant in the conversational English gatherings at St. George's Ukrainian Catholic Church in Prince George. We return to president of CNC's Faculty Association, Marta Tejero. With this training being so important for people who are applying for permanent residency status or Canadian citizenship, a certain level of proficiency has to be demonstrated before that process can move along. As far as being able to bring in skilled people into our community and adapting into our culture and society, do you see this as an
impact?
Do we see this as an added barrier for new Canadians and people coming in?
Absolutely. That's a huge barrier. There's nowhere in the north to get any kind of help.
Yeah, prior to this, we were the most northerly location where this type of education was provided?
Yes. They might be running one class in Northern Lights, but it's not clear to me that that's the case.
Do you know how long the program had been running for at the college?
So we've adapted over the years, but since 1976. So if you think of the different waves of people that Canada has welcomed, the ENLA department at the College of New Caledonia has been there to welcome them and to help them along.
You're not painting a very pretty picture, I have to say, but do you have any hopes for a more positive outcome?
I'm hopeful that we might build some more community support to try to reinstate this program in some shape or fashion, given that I don't see, with the demographics the way they're going, that the North can continue to grow and replace its workers without immigration. And with immigration comes different languages, and folks need to know English. That's just the reality of the North.
That's Marta Tejero, the Faculty Association President at the College of New Caledonia. In a written message, the College of New Caledonia stated that at this time, the college is working closely with their faculty and staff to develop completion plans for moving forward. As such, CNC won't be able to participate in an interview or provide further comment at this time regarding the ENLA cancellation. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM.
This is a CHLY and CVOX news update.
It was sort of a surreal moment when I was walking out, right? Because I've been a Whitecaps fan since I was, you know, really young. So being able to be in the shoes of, you know, the players I once looked up to was just sort of like, you know, it was a surreal moment. And then, you know, just playing in the game it was a really cool experience. I'm lost for words, really.
Local Comox Valley athlete Liam McKenzie made his Whitecaps debut with his first start for the Vancouver Major League Soccer team on Saturday, March 22nd. McKenzie is 18 years old and has been playing soccer since he was 5.
I started when I was 5 years old in the Comox Valley. I played house, grew up playing with the Comox Valley United Soccer Club for pretty much all my youth years. And then I ended up traveling down to Victoria to play for the Wave before I got scouted to move over with the Whitecaps. So that's sort of my journey.
He says that he played other sports growing up, but soccer was the one that stuck.
I just always loved the game since I had a ball at my feet. I loved it. Obviously, I played a bunch of different sports when I was younger, but soccer was always the one that sort of stood out to me. I was always the best at it, I guess.
McKenzie says being scouted by the Whitecaps Academy in 2020 is something he had been working toward his whole youth.
Being able to move away from my family, you know, at 13 to go to the Whitecaps Academy was a huge step up in my career. And then from there, I just was able to keep working and get to where I am now with the second team.
Being signed to the Whitecaps' second team last year was a major moment, not only for McKenzie, but for his family too.
It was a great feeling for me and my family. It was right around my birthday, I believe, last year. So, it was a huge moment. I worked really hard for it. And, you know, my family was really, really proud of me. So, it felt great. But I knew that there's more to do. And so I just tried to continue working towards, you know, my next goals, higher achievements, always.
It's not just family showing up to support him on this journey, but the Comox community as well. McKenzie says how special it was being able to look up at the stands this weekend and see them watching him play.
Yeah, it was really cool because there was a bunch of people from the Comox Valley, and, you know, people have probably seen, when you search up my name, a lot of stuff comes up about Comox and whatever. But it really is, I am proud of coming from Comox. It was really cool to see a bunch of people come out from the Valley and support me in my first game. And I only got to see a couple of them, you know, a few of the people after the game. I know there were a lot more people from Comox there watching, but, you know, I appreciate so much everyone in Comox supporting me.
McKenzie says that playing professionally means everything to him. It's been his goal since he was young.
So, you know, living it and just being in the moment, playing professionally, playing for the Whitecaps, it's a great feeling. And I know that I have a lot more work to do. So really it's just about trying to keep working and try and earn more opportunities.
He says that the higher level of play brings higher stakes and a faster pace, with everything on the field needing to be quicker and better, with sharp thinking and always doing his best for the team. McKenzie's motivation is earning more opportunities to play with the first team. He says the biggest challenge through all this has been showing up to the facility on days when he's not feeling his best or things aren't quite going his way, and still having to put in a good shift. His greatest pride, however, is his work ethic.
Really, the main thing is just, when things are getting hard, and things are tough, that, you know, you stick with it and just try and push through the tough moments. So I think that's, you know, that's what I try and live by.
The Vancouver Whitecaps Football Club game schedule, as well as Liam McKenzie's player profile, can be found online at whitecapsfc.com. For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
This is CICK News. When you hear about a disco dance, do you think, okay, but how about this? At an all-ages event to culminate Neurodiversity Celebration Week, local DJs played music from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s all at the same time. Now, while that sounds like a total nightmare, it was actually perfect, because at a silent disco, you don't hear much more than the shuffling of feet and people speaking over top the music coming through their headphones. Three DJs play music, and you and the audience wearing your over-ear headies can tune into a frequency and listen to whichever DJ you want. I climbed into the DJ booth to chat with Marco Kimmel, who was running two of the three channels at 9:30 at the Old Church's Silent Disco event.
So it's kind of hectic.
Are you red and green
yeah.
right now? I see a lot of people are really vibing on the green.
Yeah, that's the request. That's the open channel. So it's like people can request songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess, can you kind of explain what is actually, because this is an audio medium as well. So can you explain what is going on in this room right now?
So basically there are three different channels. And so we have three different genres of music playing at once. And so people can pick between the channels on their headphones.
So how are you kind of picking your music tonight?
So I coordinated the DJs, and my idea was kind of to do different genres, do different decades. Mm-hmm. So we have everything from 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, today's hits. I wanted to make it all-encompassing for all ages so everyone can have music they relate to.
Yeah.
Because I knew it would be kind of a family-friendly event.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
tell me what song is on Green Channel right now, because people are just loving it.
It's mostly been kind of, so that's the open channel,
right.
So people can request songs.
Yeah.
And it's definitely been the most popular,
which
makes sense. But right now we have Low by T-Pain playing,
gotcha.
Which is kind of like an early 2000s hit. Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, and I guess, can you tell me, like, so as someone who has DJed at events before, you know, by the end of the night, I'm like, my voice is gone because I've been talking over loud music. My ears are sore. How is this different?
Well, you can see right here, we've got a couple young gals having like a dance competition happening. When they're all ages, it's like, it's just so fun. It's really feeling inclusive, and
yeah.
I love how people can request songs and really just make the night what they want it to be, and it's really, Silent Disco is awesome for that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Can you tell me a little bit about this Silent Disco, and then maybe also too why this event feels like a good event to celebrate neurodiversity and awareness?
Yeah, a Silent Disco is basically you have three live DJs mixing music, but it's fed into headphones where people can switch channels to each of the DJs. Each DJ has a color.
Mm-hmm.
You can switch to the color of the DJ and listen to the music they're playing, and it kind of changes through the course of the night where, you know, people are mixing with the red DJ and then they shift over to the blue DJ depending on the music that they're playing.
Yeah.
So it really creates a fun dynamic because people are dancing.
Yeah.
And crazy, but nobody's actually necessarily on the same channel.
Yeah.
They're just having fun together. And the nice thing is that we're standing in the room right now.
Yeah.
And we can actually hear each other and have a conversation in a nice, beautiful, quiet atmosphere, but yet everybody's having fun like they're at a dance.
So something that surprised me when I walked in was how many kids are here.
Yeah, I mean, really, we tried to be family oriented in the way that we do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, we're not telling the DJs what music to mix, so sometimes it's a little bit crazy.
Okay.
But it is something that, you know, kids can feel comfortable with because there's not any alarming sounds or anything that's really crazy. It's just a good, fun atmosphere. And, you know, there's probably, you know, at least a dozen kids in the room all at one time, and they're all having fun.
Yeah.
We even had an opportunity where we had some kids go up and actually mix live DJ. Kids are participating in the whole event, and they can be part of it, which is great.
Depending on between the I see two people switching from, they just went from red to blue back to red now.
It's all fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are our DJs here?
Well, they just swapped in new DJs.
Yeah.
We had two DJs previously, John Stevenson.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of the classics guy. And Nicola.
Yeah.
And she's just a great dancer, does all the moves and gets everybody engaged.
Nice. Yeah.
And now we've swapped out for Margot and Elsa.
Okay, very cool.
Thank you to Margot Kimmel and Mark DeHoog for their interviews. That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.